Another episode of the Season of Sports with me, Asmir Begovic, where in this episode, we're going to be assessing the state of football as things stand, obviously with a few easing restrictions and hopefully football on its way back. I wanted to bring on a man who knows all about what's going on in the Premier League at the moment. That's The Athletic's own reporter, specifically AFC Bournemouth, Peter Rutzler. Pete, welcome to the show.
Hi, Asmir. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join me here on the Season of Sports. Really, really appreciate it. First of all, how are you doing? Are you well and healthy? Is everything okay? I hope your family's all well. But how are you doing?
Yeah, no, everyone's well. I'm doing all right. We're coping with lockdown and trying to stay fit when I can. And like everyone else, really trying to get through each day and making sure we're in good nick. But yeah, all good here.
Perfect, perfect. Well, that's first things first out the way. You have to get the pleasantries out. But listen, Peter, I wanted to kind of talk to you about football as things stand at the moment. It's been two months, basically, with no football around. And, you know, I'm sure everyone misses the game. And I guess there is a little bit of hope out there that football could be back sooner rather than later. And that's obviously the first things first. Is the Bundesliga is back this weekend. I mean, how excited are you to see some proper football back on TV?
So exciting. we've missed just the live action. I mean, you do love going down memory lane and rewatching games from the past, and there are some fantastic matches that have been reshown. I know most clubs have been going back over their past glorious games, and I know Bournemouth have been doing that as well. And just being able to watch live games, I think there's a sense of jeopardy, there's a sense of excitement that you just can't get without live sports. So having the Bundesliga back will be a welcome release.
Well, absolutely. The Bundesliga is the first major league to come back and put their plan in place to come back. Obviously, they've really had their act in order, really, and they've done well with what they've set out to do. And you know, their leaders have really kind of led by example, and they've put together, you know, really good programs. So they've obviously led. What have they done? I guess is it something that from the government led? What have they done so different to everyone else? Why are they ahead of all the major leagues?
I guess it comes down to the way they've dealt with the pandemic. I think fundamentally it's about being in a position where you feel it's safe for playing staff to come back, that they're in a position to test, which I think is a key priority. Obviously, in Germany, they've been testing far greater numbers, a lot quicker than we have necessarily in the United Kingdom. So that's a significant factor. It allows clubs and the Bundesliga to plan, to really put into order some kind of schedule, some way of actually managing that return process. You know, there's so much more to it than you know, just the nuts and bolts. You've got to make sure that you're able to host matches, making sure you've got medical staff, you're able to police it, and making sure that everybody is safe. And fundamentally, Germany are in a better position, and their health system has coped very well. They've acted very quickly. And that's translated across to live sport. And that's fundamentally the main reason and why the Premier League has sort of been held up.
Well, absolutely. And well done to them, because obviously I think the Bundesliga will be an absolute highlight for everyone now this weekend. And there's going to be some good games on as well. So we all can't wait for that. Now, moving on to the other leagues, I guess specifically more the Premier League as well, but kind of throwing in La Liga and Serie A, and we obviously know the French league have called it a day, and they won't be playing again this season. Mm. What are the main issues that are facing England? I mean, I know first and foremost, I believe that you know, you need the government's approval, and there seemed to be news recently that the government will allow games behind closed doors in professional football after June the 1st, and then that seems to be for me one of the biggest hurdles. And I think now that sort of data is out there, it seems like, you know, football will have the green light to come back once they've put the protocol together. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think you're right, Asmir. I think the biggest hurdle is always government approval. And as you say, that has now been granted from June the 1st. There's definitely a willingness within government for football to come back. I think it's been talked as being some kind of morale boost for everybody. And whether that's the case or not is a different debate. But in terms of what that means for the Premier League returning and elite football returning, they've got the go-ahead for behind-closed-doors games. Of course, that's only part of the story. There's so much more to it. There's the moral question, of course. You know, can can they be seen to be playing if the pandemic's not fully under control, if the epidemic within the country is not under control? And then, of course, it's financial too. And that's probably the big weight, really, trying to make sure that the games are fulfilled. Obviously, the June 30th deadline is so, so important. In terms of contracts, commercial contracts, and then also television as well. But in terms of the possibility of returning, it's on that track because it does have the green light now.
You know, it's funny. Those are, I guess, the two main, we'll get into some more issues, but I guess when you touch on the two sort of meaty, big issues, one is the moral issue, as you mentioned. And, you know, I think we fully understand, even as footballers and people in football, that football is not above anything. But I think when you look at what football is, and especially in the UK and most of the countries in Europe, I mean, it's the number one sporting industry in most of these countries. And what it does provide, I mean, not just from, as you say, from a bit of a relief from people and a sort of getaway on weekends and being able to follow their team as religiously as they do. But there's so many jobs at stake. Mm-hmm. There's so much pressure on people to kind of fulfill the games. And I think people underestimate the power that football does have. You know, I say it's not above life or death, and absolutely not. But, you know, we have to find that balance between being paralyzed by this pandemic, and I think we have to find and also by living life, right? So I think by playing games and trying to, of course, do that absolutely in the safest way possible. But I think that's such a huge issue. People say, well, football's not beyond anything. And football isn't, absolutely. But if we can create that in a safe environment, then football, I think, has to come back, and sport has to come back, because there isn't many industries. We look at North America, for example. All the four or five major leagues, there is sort of a vicinity. They're closer to each other. But you look at football and other sports in the UK, and there's just no one close. Mm. And that's why I think there's a lot of that pressure on football. Do you agree with that?
No, I would agree with that. I think it does play an important role. But I think your point to do with the amount of lives and livelihoods that depend on it is also quite important. Because if we look at the sort of lockdown easing steps, the very tentative ones that were made earlier this week by the government, and the encouragement for certain industries to go back to work. And I think football shouldn't necessarily be in a position that is entirely different to other industries based on, because of its profile. You know, at the end of the day, it's still an industry. It's still people's jobs depend on it. I mean, if you take Bournemouth, they have about 600 employees, either direct or indirectly. And that's a significant number. So, and that's just one of the smaller clubs in the Premier League. And the numbers become enormous when you go to your Tottenhams or Manchester United and Liverpool, and trying to keep the industry going is so important. And I think Steve Parish outlined it quite well in his article in the Sunday Times, where he spoke about, you know, longer term, if there is no movement to try and restart, then you will see clubs going to the wall. You will see deep impact, which I think some clubs are finding within leagues that have already terminated. You know, I think there have been some issues in Holland, and obviously in France, there's been great concern that the government has stepped in to cover the TV rights money that they're not going to be receiving. But again, it's a difficult one, because, as you're saying, you know, I think the profile should not necessarily mean that it's held to different standards. But at the same time, there's a role where people do want to see it. They do want it to return. And I think it is often distorted by its coverage and perception from outside.
Yeah, it seems that seems to be really negative at times, but I think football can have such a positive effect. And I think at times like this, you know, we understand as athletes, and I think we understand as that industry and that we're in, that, you know, you and I are in, that football has such a way of bringing people together and giving people that also a bit of sense of purpose. And I think I'm glad you really mentioned that Steve Parish article, because I think over the last little while, that was one of the best articles I've seen, you know, trying to kind of explain the whole balance of things, not just one way or the other. But I thought he put it really eloquently, and that was interesting. Now, obviously, the second part you bring is the financial impact. And I mean, these are some astronomical figures, and I don't care what business you are, but there is now already talk, even though if the Premier League fulfill the rest of the games and the rest of the program, that the Premier League will still lose 300, 350 million. I mean, these are just figures that you don't want anyone to lose, or that has an impact on the economy. That has an impact on people's livelihoods. What do you think about the money side of things? And obviously, from TV, I know that they want to have their cake and eat it. You know, understand? But they come. You know, they need football just as much as football needs them. So they will come to an agreement. I'm sure there will be more games on TV now, and they will surely be able to subsidize some of that loss. Would you say that's the case?
I think so. I think, you know, we are dealing with, as you were saying, some extraordinary sums of money. And I think, you know, we referenced Steve Parish, but he said it himself, like fundamentally one of the key issues is money, and you can't escape that. It's an inescapable part of the game today. And it's one of those things where you've got to, because of the finances in football and the way they're constructed, and I think people pore over it all the time, and they're not the best. They're not like other industries. I mean, you look at the wage comparison to club revenue. I think you had Kieran Maguire on here on a previous podcast, and he would have outlined this perfectly, just how tentative and the difficult balance there is for clubs. But it is essential, you know. They can't just be ignored. They can't just be belittled and say, let's just end it. Money's no reason for it. At the end of the day, there are, as we were saying before, there's livelihoods at stake. Clubs' very existence could be at stake. It's it becomes much more of a challenge. I think it poses more questions longer term about whether it's sustainable in the current guise and whether it will lead to better practices. But the reality is, you know, you can't escape the financial implications of what is happening and what that will mean for communities, for not just clubs, for everyone it sort of affects.
Peter Rutzler joining me here from The Athletic, reporter mainly for AFC Bournemouth. Peter, there are a couple other things I want to touch on. I guess one of the big issues is testing. I know that people have been very sensitive about testing and taking tests away from the people who need it most, and I think that's something that can't be done. Absolutely, people have to make sure that the people who need the most get it. But I believe they're getting testing from abroad. I think testing of players is going to be key, and trying to control that environment just absolutely as much as you can. And there is no such thing as a perfect scenario. I think I was in Sky Sports a few days ago, and I said, you know, fair has gone out the window a long time ago. What we all wanted, or the perfect world, you know, that was 6 months ago. Now we've got to live with this situation. Hopefully, we can get back to what 6 months ago was like in 6 months from now, or a year from now, or whatever that is, you know. So we have to kind of work our way through this. But testing is a big issue, I believe. I believe neutral grounds seem to be a big issue. Are those the sort of other two big hurdles that if they can overcome, then, you know, Premier League will be closer to being back?
I think testing is one of those issues where people don't want to take tests away from key workers, those on the front line in hospitals, care homes. And in those scenarios, and the reality is, if that were the case, you know, that these tests were somehow depriving key workers, then they would be, you know, taken by the government. They are private tests, so the Premier League are paying for that service. And if the government wanted to do it, they could. So I always find that to be, it's definitely a very important issue, and I think it's that perception is quite important, and the PR view of it, but on the ground, you know, it's fundamentally, if those tests were needed, they would be taken out of their hands. So I think that's one issue that I think should be okay. They seem to be making a lot of progress in terms of facilities offering those tests. The other issue, as you mentioned, neutral grounds, which was a big topic in the Premier League executives meeting earlier this week. I think the bottom six were widely felt to be pushing against neutral grounds. And I think what's transpired is that most clubs actually were all against it. I think for sure the bottom six have the most to lose. They want to make sure every advantage, every element of sporting integrity they can claim back is there. As you mentioned before, I mean, we're talking about a scenario which cannot be anywhere near the start of the season. So how far you can go with that is debatable. But with neutral grounds, I think every club still has things to play for. I think every position is worth at least £2.5 million, which is a significant sum of money. And that that means that, you know, trying to keep your home games, especially if you're better at home. I think Aston Villa have won, I think, two-thirds of their points have come from home games. It's a figure in that sort of gravity. Yeah. So we're not talking insignificant matters. And then obviously the outcome from Monday was that I think about up to 14 clubs were against neutral grounds. That's gone back to the government. So it's back in their court, really, and whether the police are happy to facilitate it. I think clubs will push it, and I think that's understandable. In Germany, they're doing home and away games. So it's just trying to find that medium, really. And the pressure will come when the closer we get to June 30th and more we push into July. That's when that pressure will tell and they'll go, well, what's the worst option here? And neutral grounds probably won't be the worst option, considering they'll be behind closed doors anyway.
Looking ahead over the next couple of weeks here, and you mentioned that sort of June 30th date. I think it's incredibly important in terms of budgets and contracts running out and thousands of players being out of contract. You know, that football calendar, you know, I guess you can move everything a couple of months, but really you don't want to move everything a couple of months. So they're going to have to really get creative with that. And I think UEFA will. But going over the next couple of weeks, so we have a deadline. I believe there is a deadline of the 25th of May that leagues have to submit their plans, otherwise they won't play. Is that right?
That's to UEFA, I think. Yes, they have to submit to UEFA to say what they're going to do, because the UEFA currently intend to play the Champions League and the Europa League in August, I think.
Right. And then how is that going to so because obviously a lot of the qualifiers as well and European competitions, are they just going to push that back? And I guess some teams will just play straight through. I mean, how do you think this is going to work out? How do you see it working out?
The more this rumbles on, the more delays that happen, the more questions do arise. And qualifiers is one of them. I mean, there was talk last week about potentially scrapping them. And obviously the implications of scrapping qualifiers and finding some other metric within which to get teams to qualify for next year's Champions League will lead to significant financial disadvantage for clubs, you know, that are very much reliant on it, especially those outside of the big five leagues. So if there is to be some kind of mechanism like that, there would have to be a compensation for those clubs, because the implications are huge. But that's it just comes down to the longer we keep pushing it back, the longer the dates are pushed further into next season, there'll be more and more debates about the overlap, contracting next year. That's often dismissed as being a simple option. Well, we can just contract next year. It's fine. We'll just delay this one. But contracting next year will mean that, say, flippantly, the Carabao Cup is described as being, oh, we'll just do away with it. But what about the sponsorships to do with that? Those employed to run the competition? There's much more to it than that. And the more we delay, the more questions there are. And that's why they are trying to find a solution now, as much as it jars with the current situation, trying to find a solution or roadmaps that can path a course for us to get through and to return. They're very, very important.
Yeah, well, absolutely, because the football calendar is pretty much 12 months around, around now, and it's the whole year that basically I think there will have to come a point, and hopefully by the 25th of May we'll be a lot smarter. And we'll get a lot more answers from all the leagues, because, as you say, that just has to be a date when everything has to be finished. Like you say, it's one thing pushing everything a month, maybe two. But once you start doing it more than that, then how are you going to get the season in? I mean, how many games will you cut? You've got the Euros next. You can't postpone the Euros again because you've got a World Cup to think. You've already got the problem with the World Cup in 2022 where the calendar gets all squished again. So, you know, I'm incredibly, incredibly intrigued to see how this is all going to work out. But listen, Peter, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast and giving your insight. So tell people a little bit more about The Athletic. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of The Athletic. I've subscribed and, you know, I read your guys' stuff. But tell me a little bit more about The Athletic.
Absolutely. Well, we started in the UK in last summer, in July. Beginning of August was when we launched. Obviously, for you guys, you'll know that The Athletic has already been established and is superbly successful in the United States, covering American sports, American football, baseball, basketball. And the idea is that they've taken as many different beat reporters, coupled with generalist reporters, to try and provide insight, more detail, more longer form features that escape the reliance on instant news, instant clicks, instant headlines. And the idea is to tell the full story and paint a full picture. From my perspective, I cover Bournemouth day in, day out. I am currently covering the club. We have a reporter on every Premier League side in the UK and five in the Championship as well. And what that enables us to do is we'll always have someone there to tell the full story, who's on the ground, listening, talking to the right people, and to give those supporters, you know, good centred journalism on their clubs. If you take Bournemouth, for example, they don't necessarily get the same coverage that a club in the top six will get. And that's just dictated by, you know, what sells newspapers, what generates clicks online. So in that sense, it gives a lot of freedom to write more detailed, informed, long form pieces, which is, from a journalistic perspective, from my perspective, is so enjoyable. It's great being able to tell more stories, to have a little bit more editorial freedom. And it helps in times like this as well, because it is a very difficult time for the industry where advertising revenues have plummeted. And that's putting a strain on a lot of newspapers, who obviously print sales have fallen too. And for us, with our subscription model, we're able to keep working, not as reliant on the match day. Of course, we missed the news cycle, but we're able to tell longer form features, not just about what's going on now, but go back and tell stories that weren't necessarily told before, and just provide that insight. I think that's the key word, really. That's what we're aiming for. And, you know, hopefully you're enjoying it, Asmir. And I know we did an interview with you earlier this year, which was fantastic. And it's going well, and I think it's a breath of fresh air. I mean, it's easy for me to say because I'm obviously have a vested interest, but it's a new challenge for sports journalism, and it's provided some impetus in an industry that has, you know, struggled for some time.
No, well, that's awesome. I think you guys do an incredible job, and it's great to have you guys around. So keep up the good work, Peter. Hope you stay safe, stay well, and hopefully.
Thanks, Asmir. You too. Thanks for having me.
So, guys, I hope you enjoyed that piece with Peter Retzler from The Athletic. If you haven't done so already, make sure you go and subscribe to The Athletic if you love to read about all the sports stories and just get different insights from people. I think they do a really, really great job. So I really appreciate Peter coming on here and sharing his thoughts about football. And listen, I think step by step, guys, we're getting football back, and I think we're all going to be happier with that kind of stuff. So we can't wait. We can't wait. But yeah, a couple more things to touch on before we finish this episode. Last Dance, episode 7 and 8. You know, we're getting to the end, so it's a little bit sad. But, you know, a couple of great episodes once again. And, you know, really glad to have that out there for us, for the content to watch. And just shows the kind of competitor and warrior that Michael Jordan was. Not everyone's cup of tea, but listen, to win, you need those guys pushing everyone on. And that's exactly what they do. So, you know, that was a great insight. Not sure if everyone has seen the golf match that's coming out soon for charity, for All In, the whole All In challenge. Peyton Manning and Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady. I mean, that's going to be pretty awesome. You know, getting that insight to these athletes and seeing them play against each other. And you know, I'm curious to see what Peyton and Tom have in the locker. But that's going to be a lot of fun. I think Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson did a match last year which Tiger Woods lost, and I'm sure he's going to want to try and get his own back, and so that'll be interesting. So can't wait to watch that, and you know, we're desperate for to have some content out there. The UFC was back this past weekend, you know, against all odds, they put on a huge event, an amazing event, and listen, sometimes you just got to take the bull by the horn, and we got to get back to it, you know, and that's what we're hoping with football as well. We got to go play, and you know, we got to try and get through this all together, step by step. And you know, the UFC definitely showed us the way. The Bundesliga is back this week, guys, so sports coming back, which is exciting. Can't wait for it, and hope you guys are just as excited as I am. Make sure you keep listening to the podcast here. We're obviously on Audio Boom, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify. Leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you guys, please do. Send us your questions in all the time. We'll send our tweets and Facebook messages out to get your questions in for the huddle, and so we'll get some more when we have a little bit more time next week. But really appreciate you guys listening. Keep listening, and I'll see you guys very, very soon.